out there. Welcome back to Banter Town. I am Johnny. John has the night off. Don't you remember when everyone listened to newscasts?
Yeah.
And it's normally one person, but it's another person, and it'll say so and so has the day off.
Yeah.
Like we care about their day off. It's like, I think my buddy Joey Aiello has a bit about that.
It's the ultimate martyrdom.
Like, normally he's off on Tuesdays, but now it's Wednesdays. He's got to pick up some dry cleaning. Like, we care about their... Just tell us the news.
So, hey, you got to do the intro.
I did.
You've been clamoring for it.
No, I don't care.
Yeah.
I just do this as a public service.
Listen, episode 85, we needed to shake it up a little bit.
We did.
Yeah.
We're going to keep our listeners guessing.
That's right. You never know what's going to happen on Talk
Stay
About
on your
that.
Toes. You never know what we're about.
Yeah. I wonder what stay on your toes really means. Have you ever tried to stand on your toes?
It's
Unless
hard.
You're a ballerina, it's really difficult.
Maybe it comes from that world. Like, that comes from, like, hey, girls, stay on your toes, or you failed at being a ballerina.
I mean, I do understand that your foot has that crease in it where you take off.
Your foot has a crease?
Well,
what are you... John, that's a deformity.
Well, your foot's not totally flat. It moves. Johnny, it has elasticity.
That's not a crease.
Well, I don't know what you call it. I'm making my fingers right
your
now.
Your pants have toes. A crease.
Right at the base of your toes.
A greeting card has a crease. If your foot has a crease,
it's a bend.
You have right angled your foot in a horrible way.
All these years.
I was told my foot was normal.
I've been walking on my toes.
Yeah, no, I'm. What does it come from? Stay on your toes.
There's no way
to
know.
I wonder what break a leg comes from, like in the performance world. Break a leg.
Well, I mean, surely somewhere along the line.
Maybe it's not supposed to be your leg, right? Are they supposed to laugh so hard you break their leg?
No. The idea is if you say good luck, it's bad luck. So you have to say something that's bad luck. So you tell
them. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Because nobody says anything else. Like,
right, you say break
a leg. Get in a car wreck. Like nobody says.
It's like if you say good luck, you jinx it.
Yeah.
So you tell them something horrible. I don't know why it's they'll break a leg. And
do you know
like
the
you
whole
said.
Actor story about how you don't say Macbeth in a theater?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that?
I don't know the backstory.
It's bad luck to say Macbeth. So you just say that play. Even if you're doing Macbeth, I think you just refer to it as the play.
Yeah. Well, is this one of the most tragic storylines of all
I don't know
time?
What it is. They think like the ghost of the... I haven't done any research on this, but I just knew actor people who would not say Macbeth in a theater.
That's weird. That's weird. We didn't have any sort of like paranoia or folklore about doing band stuff. Like there was never like a
yeah. Don't say Lynyrd Skynyrd on a plane,
right?
You know, which would be because you know what I'm saying. You don't. There wasn't that.
We should have had that. That would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we should create some sort of suspicion about.
Yeah, there should. We should create our own folklore.
Yeah, or a set of conspiracy theories and weird spiritual.
Don't say Rick James in a Starbucks. And there's no explanation behind it. You just say, don't say it. Don't say it, even if you want. But why would you ever?
Don't say GarageBand on a podcast.
They don't play Rick James in Starbucks.
Well, how do you know?
Well, it's just, you know, it'd be weird to be getting your latte and hear Super Freak come on.
Did you notice what was on this morning when we were eating breakfast at IHOP?
No.
So I'm in there a lot, and they play the Garth Brooks station.
Yeah. It was a whiny Garth Brooks song. I remember that. It was kind of a, hey! It had like a staccato whine to it.
Had to go again, by the way.
It started, it was like a pinched off beginning note.
This was like Garth at Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, he's being waterboarded.
Something not good. You know, but it's like his favorite songs, and he comes on and talks through them.
Mm-hmm.
So, dude, they had Living on the Edge, Aerosmith, playing this morning.
And Garth Brooks was singing
on
it?
No, Garth Brooks.
Oh, he was just...
Apparently, this is...
It's one of my favorites.
So it's not all country.
Yeah.
It's like his playlist, like stuff he likes. But then he comes on, and before you got there, I was there early, and he was talking about Luke Bryan and like how Luke's like this incredible... So it's all this personal stuff. Like if you... He's the definition of a good guy. Like he's just...
Luke Bryan is?
Yeah, that's what he says.
That's disappointing.
Because you
I want to dislike Luke Bryan.
Yeah, people don't want to like him because he's the new country, right? And he's kind
of... Well, new country, whatever. There's a lot of new country that's good. I just think he's an example of, like, just phone it in party songs.
He's not a sponsor, by the way.
Yeah.
But I told you the country song I'm going to write that's just a continual stream. I want to write... It's basically in my head to the music of Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up. Okay. So that, that real driving song. And, you know, that song, 6 o'clock, she's rubbing, you know, you get into all these lines. Yeah. I want to write that like just a bunch of
tie jeans, pickup truck,
right?
Bale of hay.
And going. I did a couple of the day.
List. Yeah.
But they all rhyme. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you act like you're going to break into a chorus and take a big breath and you just keep coming back to that verse and just do it for like 10 minutes until eventually it's just ridiculous.
Let's develop that. That could be in my show.
Like how long could we possibly
string country cliches together?
And like the band builds, the drums build. We're like, no, we're back. And we just keep, it's the whole song of cliche.
Yeah. I was, Luke Bryan, there was a couple things like, okay, this isn't terrible. And then there's just, there's one that says, going to sit right here on the edge of this pier. Watch the sunset disappear and drink a beer.
So it's going to have beer in there somewhere.
And drink beer. That song won awards, I think.
I do.
Gonna sit right here.
I don't. Yeah.
On the edge of this pier.
Drink a beer.
Watch the sunset disappear. Drink a beer. That's the song. I'm not. That's the song.
Somewhere right now.
But
that guy.
So maybe he gives a lot to charity and he's a good dude and that's fine.
But he may not have written that.
True.
That makes it even worse to me.
That he was like, that's the one.
Somebody out there.
No, and then that there are people that go, that is the one and we'll buy it and we love it.
Yeah.
That makes me just sad for all of us.
It's about the state of the consumer. That's the problem.
And maybe you're listening and you go, well, that's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
You think you're better than that song, Johnny? No, I don't think I'm better. Stop.
He
listener.
Is better. Wait.
I don't know.
It's not that he thinks it. It's that it's true. Listen, I'm okay with mindless music. I can handle that. Like, that's what instrumental, is.
Instrumental music is complicated and it's engaging. But yeah, there's a lot of fun music that I like. Yeah. So I won't say everything has to be deep and sad and heartfelt.
Well,
some party songs are fun.
Yeah. No, and I like that. I like it. Again, I think Ain't Going Down to the Sun Comes Up. I'm not a country guy, although if I was going to be, Garth would be my flavor.
Garth's your guy? Have you ever seen them live?
I have not.
You know, he's doing Neyland. You got to go.
I know.
It's too late to get tickets.
He's doing Neyland.
You're going to pay $300 a pop if you want to go to that show.
That's the thing. Laura's been to a live Garth show. I mean, again, he's entertainer of the decade or whatever.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Multiple times. Like, I know he puts on a
show. He could play a three-hour show and not do your favorite song. That's how many hits the guy has.
Yeah.
It's like we went and saw U2, and they're like that.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even come close to playing my favorite U2 song. And it's just, that's the deal. So that's why I went to the Joshua Tree tour, because they did the Joshua Tree front to back.
Yeah, because that's your record.
And that's my record, and they don't ever do. A lot of those songs are really obscure, but they did Run Into Stand Still, which is my favorite song. It's really like slow and contemplative, and so they just don't do it. It's not high energy really enough for a U2 show, but they did it on that one because they had to play the whole record. That was part of the deal. So I was
But didn't
so happy.
They decide the deal?
They decided
Were
the deal, but I think...
Were they forced to play the record?
Well, it was the 40th anniversary or whatever of that record, maybe. It's 40th? 30th?
That's some staying power right there.
25th. 35th. I don't know. 35th record. 35th anniversary.
No, I really enjoy... Here's the thing. Like, I enjoy a good performance and somebody who's a good performer. But I do think that when a song... In worship music's being criticized for that, especially when it really took off and became like its own genre.
You mean that it became too performance?
It became very much like what rhymes with Jesus.
Oh, right.
You know, he's here to please us. You know what I'm saying? Like,
somebody wrote that? Jesus
oh,
is
Lord,
here to
don't
please
tease us. You know, like, everything got very, it got very.
Appease us.
And I'm a worship songwriter. Appease us, yeah.
We have a variety of cheeses. That's a stretch.
And it's a very, like, it got very, but, and there's more to worship music than just the content. There is, like, I believe, like, you're accessing something other, and same thing for country music or whatever, you're accessing something that's emotional and not just cognitive.
Yeah.
So I can buy that, you know? I mean, you know, I was doing music for a Christian school yesterday in their chapel. And, you know, there's something about how he loves. I mean, like, now the verses are very poetic, you know, and even controversial for people. So it says a lot, you know.
Sloppy Wet.
Yeah, you get
Did
in.
You Sloppy Wet or Unforeseen?
I went Unforeseen.
Because it was kids.
It's a Christian school.
Sloppy Wet, you get giggles.
I think Sloppy Wet's, you know, I used to make fun of Sloppy Wet, but I got to be honest with you. I think that probably the way the guy wrote it, I mean, there is something like, look, I give my kid sloppy wet kisses on her forehead. You know what I'm saying?
It's not about a sloppy wet kiss. It's about when heaven meets earth, like a sloppy wet kiss.
But it is. It's saying like that this is a real relationship, is what it was trying to say. And so, but I kind of
collision.
I kind of poo pooed it from an artistic standpoint, you know, over time. But as I've gotten a little more attuned, I think, to what grace is all about and really how reckless and controversial grace really
and
is.
And frankly, sloppy.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like, I think the fact that we're all too good for a sloppy, wet kiss, I think I was probably wrong about that, but I still sing unforeseen because I wasn't going to communicate all that to the
elementary kids. Not too good for a sloppy, wet kiss is my new country song. So I'm pretty excited.
That's the one we're going to write.
Too good.
The hard part about writing a cliche song is it's actually all been written.
Yeah.
Like if you go down to Music Row, like those of you listeners who don't live in Nashville, so I have some meetings occasionally down in downtown area. So I'll go down there or a hospital visit near Vanderbilt or whatever. And you go down Music Row and man, and there's all of these
there's banners out front of each of
publishing
the publishing
companies
houses.
And they got writer's rooms.
They're literal little houses.
Yeah.
But out front there's a banner and it'll say number one hit
in X market, on X chart.
And it'll be the name of the song. And they're promoting their artists.
And there's probably 100 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Little houses, little publishing companies, and artists you've usually heard of, but writers maybe you haven't heard as much of, and they have this banner out, and they're promoting. I mean, if you've been to Nashville, then you get it. If you haven't, I mean, it's a fascinating culture. And and when I go down there sometimes, like late morning, you see these guys with a guitar case in their hand walking into one of these little houses, and they're going in a room with an upright piano and a guitar.
Yep.
They're meeting somebody, and they're literally doing this. This is their job.
Yeah.
Like they're doing this every day. And in country, and there's some amazing songwriters in country, but there is that genre of music. I think that's the one that people criticize Luke Bryan for. That really is like, how can I string together the same cliches again into a memorable melody? Because I'm really going to write about the tailgate, the time by the lake, and you know, the pyramid of cans, the girl. It's going to be
the
like
crease
this,
in your foot, et cetera.
The crease in my foot, man. I'm telling you, Johnny, it's got legs.
You need to have that looked at. That foot's got legs. It knows how to use them.
It knows how to use them. So I mean, I'm actually, in some ways, impressed, you know, that they, like, I'll hear a song, Laura Pitt plays some Brad Paisley for me. I just think, and he writes most of his stuff.
Yeah.
And I just think he's brilliant. He's very funny. He can write funny. And then he wrote, I'm sorry, country music fans, you're going to be like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But Laura, let me hear a song about him. He's writing to if you go to heaven first or if I go to heaven first, you know, and it was like this. Dude, it was like a tear-jerking type song. Like there's some gifted.
A lot of country songs about heaven.
Yeah. And then, you know, and Sadie listens to a lot of Carrie Underwood right now because of the concert, you know. So I get to hear a lot of that in my house. And that's a diverse grouping of topics.
Yeah.
So she may go from, she has one song called Something in the Water.
Yeah.
And it's basically about being baptized.
Right.
You know, and it talks about being washed in the blood and all this. And then, you know, the next song on the album is We Shouldn't Be Drinking Alone. You know, and it's a breakup kind of song.
You get to have that conversation with Sadie.
Yeah. I'm like, hey,
Let's talk about that.
Can you go back to the previous song? We'll just listen to that.
Yeah, let's just put it on repeat.
It's okay. I mean, she's going to hear stuff, so.
Listen, I'd rather hear it at the house.
We do have conversations about it, actually.
Then we smoke crack together. I don't want her to get it at school.
I'm so like not, and it's sad. There are certain things about drug culture, like I don't even know how they work. Like,
yeah, remember when we were kids and there'd be those after school specials, and I thought I was going to get offered drugs every day.
I never got offered drugs one time.
No, I think I just put off a vibe of self righteousness. Like, don't offer him drugs.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's a narc.
I do think one time someone asked me if I wanted some marijuana or something.
Oh wow!
One time at like some cornfield party when I was young, and I felt guilty.
You're like, how dare you?
Yeah, it was very. It was very much like.
Did you bind them? I bind you.
I think probably they got the look, and I was never asked again. I went to UT. I went to the in the 1990s. Tennessee
was
the number one party school in the country. Yeah. I guess there were magazines
you brought
that
down
reported
the,
this.
You
right.
brought down the curve.
By the
whatever.
Time I left, it was like number six.
Yeah.
Like, what is dragging us down?
Yeah,
it was me. I don't know. I just don't.
Yeah, I just thought I was going to be offered drugs all the time. I remember a funny story too about getting into comedy. My buddy Darren Strebelo used to tell this story about how when he started doing comedy in the clubs 20 years ago, you know, he'd been married a couple of years, and he's just like, he knew the lifestyle, and he just prayed to God, like, God, keep me safe. I know there's going to be women, and it's just, this is that thing. I'm going to be alone in hotels, and there's going to be women, you know, because I'll have gone on stage and killed, and it's just, there's that control over a crowd. It's just, it is a thing. And he says, you know, in 20 years, not one time. Didn't need that prayer. Or God was as good as his word to answer that prayer, because... Yeah. No woman has ever thrown themselves at me because of my comedy. And it's just so funny to hear him say that. I love it. Like, never once. Not even close.
Yeah.
Turns out I'm the big brother of stand-up comedy. That's me, too. I think I'm always like, you remind me of, like, my funny uncle. Or, you know, like, I have just enough extra weight on me that I'm not like, oh, that guy. Like, I just have, I have, like, 30 pounds of keep me married weight. You know? No one's slipping me a room key, John.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. You know, in all seriousness, and Laura and I talk about that, because I think in our world and line of work, you do come across, as a counselor, as a pastor, there are plenty of times that there's infidelity in marriage. Mm-hmm. And she and I always talk about like it's not that, so let's be really clear. All of us are able to fall, to stumble.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing, is you realize you're not immune to it. You have to realize that.
You're not. It's just that it's completely not meant in any sort of self-righteous way. I'm really curious in some ways, like, it's not like you just one day go meet up at a hotel.
There's steps.
With a girl, what are the steps, and when did that start happening, and when, what was so, and I think, you know, when we talk about marriage to people, it really is like a lot of subtle. A marriage dies, you know, a lot of deaths through paper cuts, just unresolved. You know, I don't think I spoke that aphorism appropriately.
I don't either. Death by a thousand cuts, I think, is what you're going for.
Something like that.
Something about a foot crease.
No, let me something before I wrote
that. Death of a thousand foot creases.
So you take the paper to the bottom of the foot.
Ugh, it's the worst spot.
Just like Shakespeare said, but... No, I think that there's like that. There is, I think, a decision to put off a vibe before there's ever a decision to cheat. And I do think it's not just good looking people who cheat. I think that's also a misnomer. Like that's not the case.
And you don't always cheat with a better looking person than you have either. Sometimes it's a million things. And that's what the five love languages kind of opened that mindset up to people. I know people who aren't even Christians who believe in that book, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Tons of people.
Yeah.
And they'll say, oh no, this is huge. It's like their gospel of their marriage.
Yeah.
They don't understand that it comes from biblical.
Well, all truth is God's truth.
Yeah. So it's like this thing of, but they'll talk about how, you know, if you don't learn to speak your partner's love language, someone who does speak that language to them is more likely to catch their eye.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, well, I cook him this meal every day and blah, blah, blah. But if his language is physical touch, and you're this person who never does PDA, and you're just very withdrawn.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some lady at the water cooler touches his arm one day, and it just starts down this thing, and then he opens up to her, and then it's like this weird thing. It's steps.
Yeah.
And so it's why it's important to know how you receive love and how your partner receives love.
Right, and important to guard yourself, to realize when you're emotionally connecting.
Yeah.
In a way that you can't.
Or sharing stuff that's like private stuff. That's the other thing, is like the emotional affairs that people have.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you're like, yeah, we had a fight last night. And I think some of this could happen maybe even in a life group setting at church, where you think you're sharing, but you're sharing something that's like this deep thing that maybe you shouldn't be sharing without the partner's consent.
Yeah.
And then somebody's like, oh, I had the same thing happen to me. Then these two people who are in perceived dead marriages, they connect.
Sure.
With each other. I think that's, you got to be a little bit careful.
What we try to do to really help with that is we split into men and women every other week.
Yeah.
And so that if you are talking about it, and then we deal with the marriage stuff with the couple together. I mean, there have been some beautiful things that I never would have thought would have worked, where we widened the circle on some very serious things. And my wife and I included, like, there's been things that we've struggled with that in the past you know, we both feel like we have the wisdom or the insight just to kind of deal with it and work through it. And we kind of decided, like, you know, I think God's ways work, and we're really promoting that this is a part of God's ways, is to widen the circle to trusted people. That's the key here.
Right.
The key is
not sharing your dirty laundry with everybody, but find people that you know are going to, like, have your best interests at heart.
And who say, who, and I'm going to use a word here, who is just the right one, they covenant to the same end game as you.
Yeah.
They believe that community is God's tool for life transformation.
Right.
They don't just believe we're going to get together and share, I'm going to give you my best advice. Like, they're working on how to receive that information.
Yeah.
They're working on searching God's word with it. They're working on what to do with it, because that's that shared mutual belief is really the key for it working. Because there are people who just overshare.
Yeah.
You know, but to say, no,
right,
us together, I'm saying, hey, I'm not offended, number one, if you saw a problem, if you came to me because we said we would do this.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually should be offended if you don't. And then two, I'm trusting you're not just going to throw, if you don't know, you're going to say, I don't know, let's go find the answer together. You're not just going to sit here and try to make me feel better. That we hope that happens, that you feel better, but we're going to go through this together.
Yeah.
And we don't have an exit strategy. Like, we're not just doing this. You come in, you know, we talk about it.
Yeah, there should be a vault too, like, that people know it's not leaving the circle or whatever. My buddy Peter calls it, he has a buddy, he calls it mutually assured destruction, kind of like the old Cold War.
Yeah.
Where we each got missiles pointed at each other, like, this is going in the vault. Like, if any of this stuff gets out, it's mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
So, like, I can tell him about anything, you know, and so I think there's people like that you need in your life.
Absolutely. I do think that it doesn't, and we do encourage people never to make the promise that you won't tell.
Yeah.
Like, what you're basically saying is I need to share something with you.
Like if it meant like I'm hurt, going to hurt myself.
Well,
or,
that's the extreme of it, and that's just the law. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I won't, if you're going to, you know, if you're a danger to yourself or to others, then that's a promise I can't make. That's just something we always say. But I think even beyond that, there are times where you're going to share something with me and hey, can I tell you something you promised not to tell?
Yeah.
And what we really want to say is, and this is everybody, that's why we don't want you ever saying that. What you would say is, hey, no, I won't make that promise, because what I have promised first is that me and you together are going to do what's best for one another. So what I promise is I won't do anything that surprises you.
Yeah.
I promise I won't do anything in the dark. But if you're about to tell me that let's just use an example, you have a major substance abuse struggle that you're not necessarily going to die from or hurt somebody from, but you're going to be enslaved to it, and you're asking me to keep it a secret while you stay enslaved to it. What you need for me to do is to widen this circle, and we've agreed that we're going to do what's best.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing with gossip. It really is a gossip killer. And this is a hard one, but this is a culture that we're trying to move into. Is like, if someone comes to you and says, hey, I need to tell you something about Johnny, but I need you not to tell anybody. Don't make that deal.
Right.
Be like, hey,
let's go to Johnny together.
Right, you can tell
figure this out.
Yeah. And if they say, oh no, I can never go to Johnny. If you want to go extreme, the right thing to do is what we think the right thing to do is you say, well, here's the deal. Obviously there's something going on with you and Johnny, and I want to give you 48 hours to go talk to him. I know him. I know he'd want to hear from you.
This feels like a real world example. I need to know what somebody has on me.
And here's the deal. If you don't go in 48 hours, then then I'm going to go and I'll bring him to you. Like, so what I'm not going to do though is sit here and let you just have this and us not deal with it, you know?
Right.
And I think that there's reasonable, you know, hey, it may be that it needs to wait a week, because I'm working this out, but I promise I'm going to go to him. I just got to work it out. I'm not gossiping. I'm trying to seek counsel on the best way. That's different than just, And Johnny, I can't tell any people come to me about you.
Well,
a lot of them are our callers, and I have one on the line right now. Caller one.
All the lines are flashing.
All the lines are flashing. We don't have one of those things.
No. God, wouldn't it be great?
Wouldn't it be great?
Just go to people.
We do have an antique typewriter in here.
Our lie detector revealed that was a lie. We just have a whole thing just like Maury.
We're now going to bring in Johnny's real brother.
It's interesting because, like, lie detectors are really just detecting how nervous you get.
Right.
When questions are being asked to you.
Yeah.
And we've derived that means, but they're not even admissible in court. And yet we have whole talk shows they still do them. Like in federal inquiries, they do lie detector tests because it can kind of lead you down a path of he might have been being. But liars who are really good at it can pass lie detector tests.
Yeah, but you got to be people, like CIA trained.
No. I think you can take drugs and do it. There's like online hacks that I've...
But we don't know how to take drugs.
We don't know how to take drugs because no one ever offered them.
And that's why I can't pass the end of lie detectors.
These after-school specials were right on.
That's interesting. I thought that they...
I'm just saying, like, if you go in and you're calm, let's say you've taken some substances and you're very calm, then they're like, you're like, did you steal the money from the register? And you're like, no, man. Like, I think you're not going to be a blip. You're just going to be high.
I think you just stereotyped the guy who robbed.
Man, I didn't take
Man, I didn't do nothing, man. I don't know if I can tell this story.
Okay. Just do it, and then we'll edit it.
I have to. So, the speaking of robbing a register, so the alarm went off at church. The other day. And
do you know that it went off the other day when we came in together? You went into the bathroom. I walked down the hall to go to the other bathroom because we were going to podcast here. And I heard the beep. And I realized you're in there and there's no way you can get to it in time. You didn't hear it because the fan's so loud.
You just got in your car and ran.
I said, this is it. This is how it goes down. No, I punched in my old code and it worked.
Yeah, I stole the system.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
God, you know what? I could get away with so much.
Yeah. Well, you're putting in your code, which is the idea we could go back and look and see it was you.
I mean,
what are you going to get away with?
I could have given my code to millions of people. We don't know.
Well, then we'll still blame you. You're the security breach. I don't think, again, there's so much about criminality that we don't.
But I know your social number, too. It's your social, so.
You know my social?
Yeah.
You don't know my social.
Watch your back, Grimer.
If you knew my social, I challenge you to say it right here on the air.
No, I'm not going to do that to you.
I would just edit it out. Let's see.
There's a four.
Oh, yeah, there is a four.
Okay. And I know your social.
You memorized my social.
No, I don't know your social. I don't know. I think I watched you punch it in one day. And I kind of stored
it away.
You mean
you know the last four numbers in my social?
That's what I mean.
Okay, by the way.
That's all I need to get into.
There's not a four in the last four
there's
numbers.
There's not?
No. Oh, okay. You're way off. You're going to come in here and try to guess one day. Anyway,
go ahead.
There was a cop car out front when I came up and the alarm was going off, so I walked to the other door.
Yeah.
And, you know, their windows are really, really tinted, so I just figured they were sitting in there and didn't really think about it. So I walk in and turn this off.
Yeah.
I turn it off and I walk to my office and, dude, they're downstairs clearing the building.
Oh, wow.
And so
now you're in the building
looking like
you were the burglar.
And so for a moment, they thought I was the burglar.
Wow.
And they,
did they draw on you?
They were drawn when I came by. And
drew guns on you?
Well, they were clearing the building. They were doing their job. He was so nice.
Oh, my gosh.
But he goes, hey, stop. And I was like, I looked down and there's a gun. And it's down at the bottom of the steps.
And you had your gun. No, you didn't.
Thank God I didn't. And I put my hands up. I was like, hey, don't shoot. I'm one of the pastors, you know. And he was so nice. He was
he'd already shot.
I think in his mind, he was protecting me then. He was like, all right, everything's fine. I just need you to come down the steps really fast. Because in his mind, someone's in the building.
Get behind me, and then we'll go together.
So, yeah. I had to show him my ID and everything when I came down.
So it was a false alarm?
It was a false alarm.
Well, what happened? What caused it to go off? We just don't know.
The front door was locked but not latched, and it was that real windy day, and it had blown the door open. So, yeah. Yeah. So
I remember when the movies came out, Paranormal Activity, where like the stuff's in your house, ghosts are in your house.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that looked like found footage, like alive. Like, oh my God, just like people are in bed and then like something moves under the covers. You're like, I wanted to do a thing like that, but it's like, it was just a branch blowing against the shutters. And then you go, normal activity. So that's what that was. The door just blew open. It was normal activity. Paranormal.
Yeah. I mean, the guy was so nice, and I was glad he was in the building doing it. It was really nice. But
that's scary.
Have
you ever had a gun drawn on you?
No. Nothing I know.
Did it make your heart rate kind of, hey, now?
You know what? It caused me, I don't think my heart rate came up per se, but I found myself not able to speak regularly for a little bit.
Okay.
Like,
a heightened sense of yourself.
Like, I came down, and normally I'd be a little more jovial, but we walked out together. He was like, man, you have a beautiful church. And I was like,
and you're like, yeah, I almost died today.
I didn't say anything. I was just like, thanks. Like, yeah, I was very like non, I was processing. I was like, okay, I'm processing this, you know. He didn't like point directly at me or anything, but he had a gun in his hand and told me not to, you know, so. It was great. So I'm assuming I can say this. I don't think it's a problem.
No, I think it's great.
I think the guy did his job. I'm glad he's in my church and we
that's
we
what they're supposed
it.
To do yeah. is come check it out. And
yeah. And so
they did.
You know, makes me want to wear a suit to the office.
Do they have a key or something to the building?
No, the front door was open.
Oh, it was wide open.
Yeah, so they came in, saw the front door open, alarms going off, and they were like, oh, man, you know. So they started clearing the each floor. So, and yeah, there you go. But
you survived, man. That was something.
Yeah. We live such a first world, like, you know, people in this world, like, they just live in violent situations yeah. and terror. I think about the people who have to flee their country literally because their kids yeah. are not safe. They're going to be forced into the drug cartels work or into prostitution, other things, you know. We really don't have, most of us, an idea, you know, of what. Yeah. If I had to take Sadie and Laura on foot and leave Nashville yeah. because we're that much in danger, it just terrifies me to think about that, and that there's just another dad out there just like me. That's what he's got. That's the best decision he had to make, you know. Yeah. And our greatest, you know, insecurities that we deal with are when somebody is keeping us more secure. We happen to walk through, you know. So, I mean, it's okay. I just, man, my heart, you know, just thinks about that. That's a reality yeah. for a lot of people in this world. So,
why do you think you would have to flee on foot? Exactly.
Because I couldn't afford a car.
If I had to flee now, you've even got a plan. You probably got a file in your computer about what you need to do if and when it all goes down.
Am I supposed to have one of
those? Your past is going to catch up with you one day.
Wow.
And you and Laura and Sadie are going to need to get so far away from here. And I'm not covering for you.
My real name is not John Driver.
I'm not covering for you this time.
I'm in living and witness protection.
What kind of person are you to be committing all these crimes? The wind blew the door open. Sure, John.
Sure it did.
That's why you took a couple big screens with you on your way out.
Well, you can only get like $100.
It'd be the perfect crime, wouldn't it?
Big screens are so cheap now.
That's true. It's not that big.
I go into Walmart. I'm like, wow. Why would I even steal?
There's not a lot in this church that would be worth stealing, honestly.
Right. If anyone's listening,
everything's kind of
would
outdated.
Rob us, just know.
Not outdated. You're just saying, like,
wow.
Your electronics.
You
are,
got a lot of nerve.
What are you going to take? Like park can lights.
You have to take apart the digital board in the back. It's worth a lot of money.
What's it worth?
But
now?
Who?
Those don't hold the value, though, because they bring the next one out every year.
What
so
are you,
it's like,
a black market board dealer? Like, how do you know they don't hold the value? You don't know anything about Johnny.
Hey, kids, you need a soundboard? I open my trench coat. There's like USB drives.
He's got an old van. So the kid's like, how much you want for it? About $3,000. I don't have that kind of
32
money.
32 channels, kids. Get you some of this.
It's got phantom power, and it's a power supply.
Oh, man, it's going to take you to the next level, kid.
It's like, maybe what if there's like a church black market? Like, that's where churches yeah. get their boards, is from other guys who stole them from other churches, you know?
I'm telling you, it's out there.
He's like, he comes in, he's wearing like a Gideon suit. You know, yeah. he's not your normal, you know, robber. And he's like, hey, I lifted this from First Baptist. You know, Second
sells
Baptist.
Sells it to Second
right.
Baptist.
They're like, ah, they get this great
steals
deal.
Steals it from
it.
Victory Baptist, sells it to Defeated Baptist. Remember when there used to be a Victory Baptist church in every city? We always yeah. used to say that. We're over at Victory Baptist, right across the street from Defeated Baptist.
It was a split.
We have defeated them.
Yeah. We really have played a second.
It was a huge battle.
We did.
And whoever wins gets to keep victory. They have to, like, they play a game of Red Rover that extends all day.
It's like capture the flag.
The other church has to be Defeated Baptist.
Oh, my. We're going to, if they believed in gambling, they would roll dice to see who gets to, you know.
Yeah. It's like free will. Like, I just did a conference for called D6. And
it's like Rock, Paper, Steeple.
That denomination is Rock, Paper, Steeple. Open the door, see all the people. But they're Free Will Baptists, and I always thought Free Will Baptist is an interesting name for denomination. Like the other, like all other Baptists are like automatons, robotic.
None of the rest of you.
Thank you for coming
will.
To our church. Welcome. Forget this. I'm going to Free Will Baptist.
Free Will Baptist. I preached in a Free Will Baptist church one time.
Yeah, I know a lot of Free Will Baptist pastors yeah. now from doing these conferences and great
yeah.
folks.
Yeah.
And so I mean them. I mean them no harm.
So oddly enough, this is, I don't know, you might remember this story.
Yeah.
So when I decided I needed to marry Laura.
Like, you needed to marry Laura.
This is like, my life is going to vastly improve by being married to Laura.
Well, you weren't wrong.
Yeah, no, I was not wrong. I've been right about that every day since. And like it was she was willing to marry me, and I needed to move quickly.
Yeah,
like before she figured out that this wasn't. You've right. seen the photos. Yeah. There was no reason right. besides God Himself and His grace that this was mm-hmm. going to happen. And so I thought, well, I needed to buy her this ring because that's what you do, Johnny. I don't know if you know
2 months'
this.
Salary. Right. But you didn't really have a salary.
Michael Scott, what do you say? You know what they say? Three years' salary.
Yeah.
Why? You think she's not going to like it? No, she'll love it. And so I needed to come up with, I won't tell you how much. Should I say how much?
I don't know. It's not going to matter.
It doesn't matter.
It was a lot.
It was a lot for me back then, but it wouldn't be a lot for most people today, you know? And so I went home and I prayed and I was like, all right, Jesus, I don't have any money. I'm on full scholarships. My college is paid for, but that's how I lived.
You prayed that Jesus would produce a diamond. How prosperity gospel are you?
I was like, Lord.
It's like a Benny Hinn prayer if ever there was one.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to walk into
this. I'm going to cast a seed.
I'm going to break into this other lady's house. And if you choose to provide, then let there be a diamond ring there. Mm-hmm. No.
And you're going to say the wind blew the door open.
Right. And the wind blew the door.
It was a false alarm.
Yeah. And I'm going to take it to the church black market. So I said, Lord, if you want me to have this. If you want me to propose now, then let me come with the money, you know.
Sure.
So I went home. I had an old car. It was a 1988 Plymouth Sundance with a cracked block in the back of the yard.
Crease in the foot.
Yeah. Might as well have. I washed it, vacuumed it out, because it would start still. Mm-hmm. Put it out in the front of the yard with a sign on it. It sold it in a day.
Wow.
For like $350. Gone. Right. You know. My dad had his old car was there. It was an old like 1985 Audi. And I went, washed it, waxed it, cleaned it up. It still started somehow. I got it started, I think. Put it out in the front yard, sold it for like $500.
Boom.
And then someone called out of the blue. It was like summer. Someone called out of the blue and said, hey, there's a revival. Okay, Johnny, I'm a preacher, but at that point, I don't have a pastoral job or anything.
Yeah.
I'm just a college kid, a Sunday school teacher kind of guy, you know. Who would speak occasionally. I don't know why or how. I think it was a family member. They didn't know I was doing this. They were like, hey, there's a Free Will Baptist Church up in like Jolton, I think, that they have a revival. And we suggested you as the speaker. And I was like, what? And so they were going to pay me. It was a small little church. I went up and they paid me like, you know, $400 or something, which was crazy.
Now you're in ring money.
And I had, within the time, and there was a few other things that happened, within like a week, I had all the money I needed for the ring. And I was like, so I went and bought the ring. And that's how, but free, that's when you said free will. That's how that reminded me. That was the time I spoke in a free will.
You started your own revival.
Let me tell you. No. They ended. They actually ended the night early. So they were like,
they're like, you killed the revival.
Remember our friend Rusty used to call it survival.
Survival.
We've been in survival for like 3 months.
It is because when you work at the church, it feels like that. You're just how long is this going to go on?
Yeah. Nightly church services. Yeah. See, Johnny, every day we should be being the church.
When I first moved here to take the job cleaning the church here, we had revival services. We had Bobby Bowen.
Wow, you had just taken the job, yeah.
He was here all week that week, and I was actually still doing like all my correspondence work to get my ministry credentials.
Yeah.
So I was working all night, cleaning the church all day because we had services at night.
Wow.
And he was here doing his end times theology.
His eschatology.
Eschatology.
Yeah.
It's a big chart.
Huge chart.
Of the beginning of time all the way to the end of time.
Yeah.
It was all like, and it was huge. It would go all the way across the edge of the stage.
Yep.
And Bobby Bowen.
Yeah.
So that was my first week on the job
here. He passed away last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a good dude.
He was. And it was Andrew and Terry's pastor in Crossville for years and years. So yeah. But I can't believe that's when you started. So
because
we have never done like revivals here, but that was like.
Well, that was kind of like, this is my guy. Yeah, if they were going to bring in somebody, it would be
his old pastor. And he was doing that a lot and had a lot of knowledge about end times and stuff, you know, so. But interesting. Yeah, that's a flashback. And the big funny thing was, and he could be a funny guy, is because we are a coffee shop church, always have been. And there's coffee stains.
Yeah, so people come in late. He hated people coming in late, too.
Right.
So people are coming in late with a coffee in their
hand.
From
the cafe.
And he finally stops after like the second night and goes, this is the drinkingest church I've ever been to in my whole life.
Yep. And so we all laughed real hard, you know. And then they called him Papa Bear, I think they called him. And so later on, somebody took a bear from like Build-A-Bear.
Yeah.
And we took the clip from the audio of several things of him speaking.
Yeah. The other one we said was tattoo crap.
Yeah.
The biggest, he goes, let me tell you something, young people. The biggest rage today is all of this tattoo crap. Yeah. So one of the arms, one of the hands, if you pushed it, said tattoo crap. And the other one said, this is the Drinking Church.
And we had, he had a little chart. Roy made the little chart. And replica right behind him. He had a little pointer. And sits in Andrew's office today. Papa Bear. A little teddy bear that says, it actually has Pastor Bowen's voice.
Pastor Bowen's voice.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's cool.
That's the kind of stuff that we do.
We're weird.
We've done a lot. We've wasted some
time.
And
he showed it to Bowen several times after that. And he thought it was funny.
That's part of the deal. We don't do things usually that don't honor someone else.
They're in on the joke.
You know, I thought the other day about, because we told some stories like the dog that peed on the purse and all that. You know, I have those tracks.
We could play.
You know the one I thought of that I thought would be funny to play is we used to take these Bolivia trips, and Johnny and I would always write a song.
Oh, I'd be terrified, embarrassed.
And we recorded one of them.
Oh, no.
We recorded,
I can't remember.
Not the rap.
It was the song.
The rap was the reprise.
Yeah, the reprisal of that hook.
Don't flush paper down the toilet.
Yeah, because you don't flush in Bolivia. The sewer infrastructure is not good there.
Do you think we should play?
I don't want to play that.
You don't want to hear it?
No.
But we're teasing right now, the listener.
We can say some of the words. Bolivia, your streets are filled with congestion.
You have street signs.
But they are merely suggestions. Because people drive like crazy people there. It's insane.
Yeah.
You can drink the water only if you will boil it. You can use the baño.
But don't flush paper down the toilet.
Yeah.
This is a songwriting episode, Johnny.
A lot of people say our verses are poetic.
I don't understand why you would want to keep this. You're really ashamed of your past.
No.
And it's a really cheesy track that I did in GarageBand.
Yeah.
It had like a...
Not like the cheesy track we did in GarageBand for the commercials I just did.
Didn't you play a little solo on this one? You did.
Oh, my goodness.
We got to play it, man.
You have it in front of you?
I think so. Hold on.
Let's put it at the end of the episode.
No, we got to do it right now.
It's a good thing to make people listen to the end.
But we're nearing the end already.
Oh, okay.
Johnny, we're nearing the end.
Our own end times.
Here, let me pull it up. Stand by.
Cochabamba, you were driving me loco. On your roads, I was scared of more than just un poco.
That's a little.
And we have to leave, but our hearts are here to stay.
I love the triangle.
Bolivia, you'll always be our amore. Bolivia, your streets are filled with congestion. And you have street signs, but they are merely suggestions. You
bass.
Can drink the water, but only if you will boil it.
Son, you better boil it.
You can use the baño, but don't flush paper down the toilet.
Solo.
Here we go.
Oh, it's so good.
We like to stay, but it would cost a million Bolivianos. But with the exchange, that's only $14 Americano.
That's just insulting to their economy, frankly.
You can drive anywhere you want to. You don't even need a license. Just take a look at Pastor Andrew.
Because he was driving there without a license. I remember that.
And you have street signs, but they aren't merely suggestions.
You really build
this all garage. John, you know how to build a song, buddy.
Let me tell you something.
You will boil it. You can use the
I think we repeat the chorus.
It's building even more.
Bringing in the tambourine now.
Signs, John, you know how to make a song work.
Guys, it's about layers.
Why didn't this chart? Don't we coda the toilet here at the end?
Yeah,
we coda it?
Yeah.
Use the baño, but don't flush paper down the toilet. Down the toilet. Down the toilet.
Oh, a little minor.
Johnny, I'm sorry.
Wait. I thought we added like a flush thing at the end of it. I swear I remember a flush.
That would have been too much, Johnny. We wrote
That's
a song
over the top.
About toilets.
You can't put a flush in. Now it's too real.
Yeah. No. Wow. Yeah, that was something.
Embarrassing from our past. I'm proud of that solo. That was a tasty little solo.
That was a little MP3 I pulled in, so I know the quality is not great, but that's what I have. So.
Yeah, I was remembering, John, we wrote that there, and then John played it on his QWERTY keyboard. He played, because there was some program where you could play certain keys of your keyboard and it would act like a controller.
It's called keyboard typing. Yeah, so like
so the, all the little synth was you playing it on your QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, I played
I don't know how you did it.
On the laptop keyboard, so like a J was a C or a K was a D, and then
that doesn't even make why would a C be a C?
I didn't have a MIDI keyboard with me for some reason.
Yeah.
And so that was just
because
easier.
We were in Bolivia, John, that's why.
No, I made this at home. I think we wrote the song, performed it live, and then Andrew, I think, wanted us to do it for church or have a track for, you know what? Did it go behind one of the videos or something, maybe?
Yeah, maybe, and we needed it then.
So we recorded it when we got home, but the deal was, I knew once I just got it all down once, and of course your MIDI, MIDI editing, then I just looped it all, so yeah. And then you came in and recorded a live guitar with a microphone, so yeah.
Wow. That was, why didn't that chart?
I don't know, man. I tell
maybe
you.
Maybe because it was...
Creativity is a dish
had a ton
served.
Of inside jokes and...
yeah. We could be one of those people down on Music Row, you know?
We could. Just, we wrote Flush Paper Down the Toilet.
Don't flush paper down the toilet and I put the pee in your picnic.
That's too much.
It's a lot of bathroom
humor.
Yeah.
Humor.
That's kind of our...
Sorry, church.
Yeah, that's what we are. But
that's okay.
No, it was fun, though. We used to really enjoy, again, the inside jokes are what made it so much fun when you're
well, that's how mission trips are. You get all these fun little moments that are kind of preserved in time. And the song, you just kind of list those things, and people are like, yeah, that was it. Yeah. And it's a cool way to preserve it.
Plus, practically, it was a good reminder for everyone, please
don't flush paper down
the
toilet.
I was privy in an assist. I assisted one time on helping to unclog a sewer line. In Bolivia. That was not okay. You don't want to do that. Yeah.
Don't flush it.
No. I don't want to unclog a sewer line in any country.
Mm-mm.
But I didn't, I especially did
maybe
not like it.
Maybe things are better there now. Do you think you can flush there now? Have you heard?
I don't think so.
Still.
I don't, that probably depends upon, I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it. So you can, listen guys, you can clog toilets in any country.
Maybe we have listeners in Bolivia though. Maybe there's areas in Bolivia like, how dare you?
I agree. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not trying to insult. We're just doing what we were told.
Yeah. We were told don't do it.
Yeah.
Cause it's going to back up the plumbing and we're going to waste a bunch of time of the mission trip actually working on the house here.
Right.
You don't want that.
No.
We want to help people.
We want to help people and clogging a toilet does not help anyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's timely advice. So it's the thing to thank God for. If you routinely flush paper down your own toilet, you're like, that's something I didn't think to be thankful for.
Yeah. You really do take that for granted.
You're welcome, listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. And next time you do it, you should be thankful. I mean, there really are a lot of things. I mean,
you should feel relief already, but then the extra relief of...
You just walking, by the way, to the refrigerator, if you have a refrigerator water dispenser and just getting clean water out of the door.
And if you don't, that's fine.
It's been filtered.
Why wouldn't you? They're great.
So we have a lot of great things. You know, I really do think, I was thinking about that scripture this morning that says
can put 1,000 to flight.
That's good. It says, that's not the one I was thinking of though. It says, one gives freely, yet grows all the richer. While another withholds what he should give and only suffers want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about that counterintuitive.
Right. You think if you give it all away, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the principle, and it's not a give so you can receive type scripture. It's just saying someone who, in my opinion, what it's saying is like the actions of generosity, the sowing and reaping of it, you know, produce a lot. And I think growing all the richer is not just financially. I think there are a lot of people that. There is, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but my point of all that is when we talk about things like this, things to be grateful for, things, whether it's where we live, I don't want to be just found, I think gratitude lends itself to taking more action towards generosity or towards justice, towards, you know, being a part of improving or being a part of helping people who don't have that, you know, and not just sitting back going, well, I'm glad I got that, you know.
Well, and honestly, the thing on mission trips that's so amazing is that you learn way more from the culture that you're in.
Yeah.
You're not like, we're here to be the great white hope. Like, it's never that. It's always like you learn so much about yourself and not just what you take for granted, but you learn like what you can do without and what you're like. I remember being at a table because we didn't have Wi-Fi for the whole week and remembering these rich conversations that we had.
Yeah.
And then going back to my phone at the end of the week and just being like, it's like taking on this thing that you're enslaved to almost because you realize man, we used to live a life like this. We would sit around the table, and because we couldn't just look at our phones all day, we had these rich conversations.
Yeah.
And that's what it should be.
Yeah.
And so you learn from that lack comes good things.
Yeah.
You know.
And I do think when you also see the richness of faith of brothers and sisters,
yeah,
that you, I don't know if it's everywhere, you know, but I think it's more difficult for you to conceptualize of believers in other cultures from your native location. Again, it may be true of everywhere. It may be especially true of us in, you know, who are Americans. I think in Europe and things like that, it might be more common to think of people in other cultures because you literally can get on a train in 20 minutes and be in another country as opposed to where we are. It's unless you live in the border, that's right. You know, more difficult because we're so vast geographically. But I think, man, I mean, there's been a lot of people. We talked about Pastor Julio before in Panama. You know, we talk about people in Bolivia that we've met who, people in Cuba, you know, our friend Fernando in Cuba.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about, you just realize they're just like me. And I know that sounds dumb. You know they were. It's not like I would have said, oh, they're different, you know. But they're you can't just...
Yeah, but the biases are built in until you see it sometimes.
Right. And they probably had theirs too. And there's you know,
they probably think, who knows what they think of Americans coming over. Yeah.
The benefit of connecting both in friendship and in a spiritual, again, towards the same goals, that connection, that mutual sharing of faith, it really is one of the most encouraging things and eye-opening things. And I think that's why a lot of our evangelical churches lack multiculturalism, ourself included. That's something that we pray about. We don't live in a highly diverse city even, but diversity brings such a richness. I was thinking about that Ephesians 1, that we would know what are the riches of the inheritance, the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints. Like that, the more diverse that you realize who the God's people, they are where
they're part of your inheritance.
Yeah, they're part of your inheritance.
Yeah.
And it's a glorious, like it's a rich and glorious inheritance to be with people of faith when you're sharing those things together and sharing life together. So it's just it's fascinating what that does to open up your eyes. So, but anyway, interesting.
Yeah. Well, that song's going to definitely, that's going to run with it now. We put that on iTunes.
It's going to take off. I think this is how you two got started, actually. It was a podcast, just a simple little something.
I don't think they had podcasts.
Oh, sorry. It was like 40 years ago.
It was a long time.
Yeah.
That's not true.
But, you know, here's the thing.
It could happen.
Do I think the production was awful? Yes. Do I think the song is silly? Yes. Do I think it's not going to carry past that? No. Was it too many inside jokes? Yes. But you know what? So I'm not proud of any of that. But I'm always proud of looking back and going, oh, that was fun. An experience that we got to share, you know, kind of thing. So, because there's a lot of times, like our very first record, Scarlet Thread record, like it's cringy for me. The recording is cringy. The songwriting is cringy. And I did all the songwriting. Me singing on it, extra cringy. And so, like, I listen to it and go, ooh, you know. But
extra cringy.
Yeah, can I get that
new
extra
from
cringy?
Jif. Yeah.
But, you know, you do look at it and go, and you kind of taught me that, like, but I can't dismiss that's, you can't do what you're doing today without doing what you did.
Yeah,
then.
You have to, even comedy, of course, you know, you hate your first jokes, but in the moment, you have to keep doing it. That's how you build. And that's the thing about throwing, like, same thing with giving. Like, you have to be willing to get rid of, to make more. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're like, if I get rid of this, what if the new stuff's not as good? Like, you have to think of it as, like, I have to get these out of the show to make room for the new things that are going to come.
Right.
It's like a box of Kleenex. You have to think, like, when I pull this Kleenex, there's going to be another Kleenex.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, eventually you get to the last Kleenex. This is a bad analogy.
That metaphor has its limit.
I'm on my last Kleenex, John. And
the box is empty.
I've been buying Kleenexes for a long time from other comedians.
Hey, speaking of, we did not talk about your dry bar.
There's
special.
Not time now. I'll share the story. But it went well.
Yeah.
Dry bar went really well. And Utah's a really beautiful place.
Yeah.
And you talk about white people. A lot of white people in Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even by Tennessee standards.
Yeah.
A lot of white people. But sweet people. And it was a ton of fun. And dry bar folks couldn't have been better to work with.
Yeah.
And I did two shows. And both of them went really well.
Good.
And now we wait to see when, if and when it comes out. I'm assuming it's coming out because it went well. So,
are you going to the airwaves now to call for its release? Like, are you adding Drybar pressure?
I'm calling you out, Drybar.
Thanks for the great weekend.
Yeah.
But.
No, they have their whole process of editing and they have people in front of me. They've done hundreds of these specials. So,
yeah.
When it comes out, though, I'll be sure and let everybody know and they can go on their Drybar app and watch the whole thing. And
because you can filter on the Drybar app.
You can filter
by your likes and dislikes.
By your likes and dislikes and certain material. Even though it's all clean, some people don't like certain references. Right. So.
They don't. They would not want
or political.
Don't you can, flush paper down the toilet.
They wouldn't want a toilet.
No bathroom humor.
Reference sometimes. Families.
Yeah. But come on, man. Crime humor. We've done some crime humor today. Wow, we're really edgy.
We
did talk about drugs.
Guns and drugs and toilets.
We've done a lot.
Oh, my.
The trifecta.
Foot creases.
If you will.
Yeah.
It's really,
I don't know.
We push the envelope here.
You let me do the beginning. Can I do the ending of the show too? Guys, we thank you so much for being our listeners and putting up with our nonsense. And please subscribe, leave a review. That really helps us.
It does help.
To get more listeners. When you do that, it helps iTunes to push us more and Google Play. You can find us wherever you find your podcast. So make sure you share those links out. And leave a review and tell your friends, please, because we just we need all the help we can get. You can also go to Patreon if you want to become a patron. That's how you can help us make more great content. We send out routinely free things to our patrons. So please do that, and you can get in on that and send us your questions. And we're going to be here next week, and you can help us by listening all week.
Every week.
John, just listen, and thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Scripture and brain science agree. Meditating on God's Word transforms us and reduces stress in our lives. I'm Jody Nisnik, host of So Much More, Creating Space for God, a scripture meditation podcast. And each week I give you space to hear God's word, listen to the Spirit, and pray about what's on your heart. And then we have a thoughtful conversation with guests to help us go deeper. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.